Hey everyone, welcome back to the latest episode of the Punished Podcast. For today's episode, we'll be discussing video game visuals, art direction, graphical fidelity, and whatnot. You know, what does it mean for a game to look good? What kinds of art styles are timeless and which ones are not? We'll get into that and more in a bit. I'm Sam Martinelli, editor at Punished Backlog. My pronouns are he, him. We're going to go around. Everyone's going to say their name and their pronouns and also what they think, based on their own interpretation, is the best looking game of all time. Let me say the best looking game of all time is Donkey Kong Country 2, Diddy's Kong Quest.
Oh my God, every time with the Donkey Kong.
You know, some things are properly rated, Amanda.
That's true.
All right, so yeah, who's up next?
Interesting choice. My name's David Silbert, pronouns he, him, editor here. And I think the best looking game of all time, sorry if I steal yours, Kay, I gotta say Final Fantasy 13 still holds up exceedingly well. I think it's that game that perfectly balances artistic style and technical prowess. So that's my choice.
Wow.
I'll follow up. My name is Vaughn Hunt, pronouns he, him, writer here at the Punished Backlog. Final Fantasy 13, interesting choice, but we don't have time to get to that. My choice is Ghost of Tsushima. I think you look at realism in a game's graphics for me, and that's like my go-to. And I know you went to that first level, the wind blows, you see the autumn leaves fall. That's all it took for me.
Yeah, I think 13 is definitely an interesting choice. I think for what it's worth, like, I think the CGI cutscenes in 13 are like Square Enix peak. Like, they were really cooking in that era. Probably cooking too much. I think they focused on it too much. But I think for me, the best looking game of all time is obviously modded Skyrim.
Sorry, who are you?
Yeah.
That's a good point. Sorry. I'll restart. Okay. My name is Kay. He, him. I'm an occasional contributor to the Punished Backlog. And I think the best looking game of all time is modded Skyrim.
Modded just like to the highest graphical settings, or were like the B movies in it?
Yeah, it's going to run at like 8 frames per second. It's not going to play well, but Skyrim never played well, but it's going to look fantastic.
Yeah. It's an excellent slideshow is what you're saying.
Yes.
It's a PowerPoint of a game at that point.
All right. Hello. My name is Zach Golanello. I use he, him pronouns, and I'm also a contributor to the Punished Backlog, of course. I'm going to go with, for the best looking game of all time, Cuphead. You'll see that is certainly a theme for me. I'm going to be talking mostly about cartoony visuals and how those types of things can hold up longer, and to me they're just more fun to look at. And when you get creative, unique art styles like Cuphead, is just off the charts there in terms of kind of that old style cartoon look. I love that kind of thing. I love being able to see video games as more of kind of that artistic medium, and when you get, you know, in your bag like Cuphead, I think that's it's totally unique, and it brings something different to the table, so I gotta go with that.
We all nodded. I know you, the listeners can't see it, but we all immediately nodded when he said Cuphead. So that's clearly a good pick.
Kay's already ready. He's ready to fight. He's like, I did not at the imperceptible level. I'm Amanda Tia, and pronouns she, her, or they. Also an editor writer here at the Punished Backlog. And the first thing that came to mind for me was Horizon Zero Dawn Forbidden West on the PlayStation 5. Within, I don't know, the first half hour, I just kept going, wow, like out loud saying, wow. And like, oh my God, beautiful, gorgeous, like just really impressive. Like, I don't know, things just felt texturally very real. I think, you know, the leaves falling, there's moments like that, you know, seeing snow, amazing. And just felt really lush.
Imagine you like, just doing your best Owen Wilson impression.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, literally the whole time. Yeah, by myself. Yeah, and then I'm like mumbling it to myself, trying to perfect it. Yeah, but it's gorgeous, gorgeous game.
All right, we have a lot more to say about all of this in a minute. We're just going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back. Getting back to the topic at hand, let's discuss video game visuals. While any video game experience centers on play and control, visuals and visual design have always been an essential pillar to the medium. After all, the main way companies build hype and excitement for a game is through visual media, trailers, screenshots, gameplay demonstrations. But what exactly do players want visually from their games? To some extent, graphical fidelity versus art direction has been a subject of discourse for decades. But now that the upgrades to hyper-realistic graphics are getting smaller and smaller, and AAA budgets keep ballooning, the nature of that discourse seems to be changing. It's also worth noting that we've seen somewhat of an indie game revolution over the past decade or so, where smaller studios, most of which are unable to produce graphical fidelity on par with their AAA counterparts, are forced to be more creative and intentional with their visual design. As Zach noted earlier, Cuphead is an example of this. So to start, let's just go around, let's describe what exactly we think makes a game look good, because this could mean anything. And of course, whether you think fidelity matters more or less than style. Zach, this topic was your idea, and I'd like to hear more of what you have to say.
Thanks. Yeah, I think I'm really curious to see what everyone thinks, because for me, it's kind of coming from a place of a lack of interest in the newest cutting edge visual styles. And I don't know if I'm kind of on an island with that take, but for me, you know, we've gotten to the point with the PS5 generation where I've stopped being excited about that being the draw for that new platform or kind of your consoles coming to the forefront. I never upgraded, still haven't gotten my PS5. And I feel like, what am I doing it for? You know, am I actually trying to get no loading screens or kind of higher technology, or is it just that visuals component? And so I'm a Switch loyalist, and you know, that has been a level of graphical fidelity that suits me. I don't need to get any crazier than that. I know there's still so much talk about what the actual capacity is for the Switch and what it can handle. There's certainly some games that do not look great. But I think, you know, for me, I don't need that. And there, like you said, there's so many more interesting art styles. And if you can kind of bring that indie gaming, you know, level and do something new and unique, that's what draws me so much more than just like, hey, this is so photorealistic. And it's like I'm playing a movie, or like I'm in, you know, I think we're going to talk about kind of that uncanny valley situation of just like, is this even real? So I'm curious what people have to say, because I may be at a different point, but I'm not sure.
Amanda.
I think it's interesting that you say that, Zach, because I brought up the PS5 and in the intro, and I don't think I was ever somebody that, I would say similar to you, I was like, oh, I don't really care about this kind of thing. Like, cool, if it looks great, great, you know, whatever. But then with the PS5 and these games, I mean, Control is another game I'm thinking of. Alan Wake 2, both of those, you know, same studio. Games where I was just like, whoa, like, wow. And so I do think there's something to be said for where we're getting. I mean, Final Fantasy VII, Rebirth and Remake, like they look great and they look really, really good. But I agree with you that there's a lot of really cool, interesting art styles, especially on the Switch, partially because I think it's a very indie friendly platform, and because it can't, you know, support these big immersive 3D constantly rendered graphics, like some really gorgeous styles. There's a couple indie games I'm thinking of right now. There's Overboard by Inkle, which does a sort of like 1920s, 1930s sort of like cutout art murder game. It's great. And then Battle Chef Brigade is delightful, where it's sort of this anime chopped hunting monsters. Another game I'm thinking of is Okami, which came out in the mid-2000s, originally for the PlayStation 2. And it actually won IGN's Game of the Year that year, I think. This is before the Game Awards existed. But it's this game where you play this white wolf that's this celestial being that's coming down to save a blighted, cursed land where like nothing's been growing. But the gameplay is that you have this power of the celestial brush, which the wolf does by like running around with their big tail. And the movements are really fun and really interesting. Like you're trying to, the gameplay is that you're painting this screen, and everything is styled as if it's this animated traditional Japanese ink artwork. So beautiful, so fun. I've really never seen anything else like it. My friend Allison bought it for me about 5 years ago. I had never played it before. And I played it last year as part of our Punished backlog series for the summer challenge, where like we all try to go through our backlog. And I felt like I was like, oh, I also got me this great game, I've never played it. So I gave it a shot, and there are some things that don't quite hold up. Like some of the gameplay is a little boring at this point, almost 20 years later. Like the movement stuff, like the brush stuff is really cool, but a lot of the like just running around, like I'm a wolf, like bumping into boxes, like feels definitely a bit mid-2000s. And the other, there's some like kind of dicey stuff where there's, for example, there's this cricket that gets lost in this goddess's clothes at one point, like all the folds of her kimono, and another NPC goes, "Ooh, wish I was that cricket." And I was like, "Ew, gross." But it is, like, I stayed with it as long as I did because it's so beautiful. Like the way you look at the map and the depth perception, there's sort of this these like scrolls that unfold. It just clearly is a game that loves and admires art, and it's really cool to see art come to life like that. But yeah, I think when it comes to these big mainstream games that most of us mentioned in our intro, like there's something that we're all drawn to, right? Like I think a lot of us in the gaming sphere in general is very interested in what's realistic, what's beautiful, what makes you feel like you're really in it.
Yeah. I think one of the few benefits that the highest fidelity games or systems or what have you, hardware, like kind of brings to the table is, I think it matters the most when, especially when studios are pursuing this form of hyper-realistic, photorealistic, like somewhat cinematic storytelling that is meant to evoke film. Like Ghost of Tsushima obviously has this where it's sort of evoking a sort of Kurosawa-esque, I mean, you know, don't skewer me, but Kurosawa-esque like style of visuals and storytelling. I think games like, for example, Uncharted 4 is like a very late-ish PS4 game. And I think that is a game that is like really, really severely improved by the fact that like the facial animations of all the characters are like good enough that like the story can actually evoke some like level of pathos. Cause I think Uncharted 4 is like a reasonably good action, stealth, what have you, third person shooter game. And without like the narrative being able to evoke that, like reach that level of evocative like emotion in the characters graphically and fidelity wise, it like falls really flat. I think if you like go back and look at Uncharted 2, like the PS3 Uncharted 2, like it looks hideous. Like people look like demons. Chloe looks like Chloe scares the shit out of me like in that game. Like she looks like, I don't know. So I think there's that like specific niche where it starts to matter a lot. Like I've noticed this especially for me with like facial animations. I think Rebirth and Remake did a really good job of this. I think like the Yakuza games or Judgment, you know, that whole where they like are facial scanning in like real actors or just like things like that. Like I think Yakuza is
stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I think Yakuza is like a very, you know, it's sometimes it's very silly and sometimes it's like very serious, and that level of like dramaticism, like I think it varies wildly with some of the games. Like Yakuza 0, I think I got much more into the story than like playing like 4 or 5, which were like are available on current gen, but they're not like remastered in the same way. So I do think that's like an element where the fidelity really comes into play. And I think like if you're like, I don't care about the Sony, air quotes, Sony cinematic style of game, that, I totally get that too. But I think this is one element where it like really shines through.
I'm curious, Vaughn, you mentioned Ghost of Tsushima as your example of games that look good. And that is, I remember when it came out and I played a little bit of it. It wasn't for me, but visually, obviously it was stunning. But it wasn't just that things looked real, is that it felt very intentional of where these physical objects were. Like there was that village where there were the golden leaves all across the ground everywhere. And like, that's not just, oh, that looks like a leaf. It's the developers at Sucker Punch knew we have to make a whole area that looks like this. So does that play into why you chose that as your example?
I think so. Yeah. I feel like Ghost of Tsushima is unique because it is like as mentioned, it is like a Kurosawa style, game, you know, as far as cinematics go. And like the duels, like when it zooms in on the duels, that cinematic effect is just like unparalleled to anything I feel like I've seen in gaming. It's only seen known in movies. My second pick would have been The Witcher 3, just based on the strength of Velen's, dawn / sunset evening setting the entire time. And we're just talking about, and I'm really talking about environmentals, because as like Zach was saying, we're at the point where like that's kind of where we are with like realism and games and graphics. Like we're not talking so much about facial expressions, which are really important, but I feel like if your game doesn't have basic facial expressions, like you, I'm not going to say you failed, but you're going to be like those Witcher 3 memes when Geralt's face is all like screwed up. Like there's just some essentials to gaming that I feel like we've kind of peaked at when it comes to graphic fidelity, but at least when it comes to environments, they can still get more beautiful, more realistic. Rain, snow, earth effects, like keep them coming.
Zach.
Yeah, I think that's such an interesting part of it for me too, is because, you know, I, as someone who doesn't have a PS5, I think there's probably a lot more for me to explore. And maybe there's been, you know, advancements in this way, but I think of Zelda and I think of Tears of the Kingdom and Breath of the Wild here as like, they're not the most visually stunning. They've got a cool art style. They're interesting. They obviously are in that cartoony Zelda theme. But the thing about it that's so great is that everything is interactive, you know, and I think in a lot of the games where we talk about, oh, they're beautiful to look at, that's all they are. They're beautiful to look at, and you can't go to that place or interact with that thing. And so I'm willing to trade that. I think that for me, as someone mentioned Uncharted, I have this lasting memory. I think it was Uncharted 3, where I remember watching this video and it was like this highlight where Nathan Drake would like touch, I might have brought this up at a different podcast, I'm not sure, but he would like touch like fence posts as he passed them. And it was like this new interacting with the world. And it was like, he would do that in the middle of the desert. It's like, if you're going to do this visual, like, you know, touchstone thing, it's like, you got to get it right. And I think those things pull me out of it. And if you can't interact with the right things, you know, what's the point? It looks cool, but it's not doing anything for me. So that's the trade-off I'm willing to make personally, but I don't know if everyone feels that way.
I 100% agree with like the interactive, like playing the game is the most important part of the game, generally speaking. So I totally understand. I think with like new Zelda, you know, Breath and Tears, like it's kind of an example where when they get into the story beats, I kind of like do feel that like pain point. I'm like, this kind of like looks terrible. And I like, am really like uninvested in the story because of like the way it's like framed and told and how like all the characters look and stuff. Like, I think it was somewhat charming in like the Twilight Princess era when like everything looked so bad. It was like they were like shortcut cutscenes in a way where I would be like, I get it, because everything looks terrible anyway, so I don't want you to linger on this. It's like kind of comical, right? Like Link would do like a shocked expression and just like they would, you know, I mean, Twilight Princess had like a handful of very like horror-esque scenes, so it wasn't completely horrible in that regard in terms of like artistic sensibilities. But like, I think that's an example where like there are clear trade-offs to it. And like, I don't really play Zelda for the story, sorry to all the lore heads, so I think it's fine. But you know, I think Nintendo games will never prioritize that sort of experience, so it's fine for them. It's not an issue. I mean, Nintendo and Sony have done a pretty good job of carving out those niches for themselves, at least in the minds of players, if not like in reality.
I want to go back for a second. First of all, Kay, those games look great and awesome. You're wrong, but I'm not some idea. David, you mentioned a game from the Xbox 360 PS3 era, which I think all those games look great, but if someone didn't play those games at the time, maybe they don't. So I'm curious your take on that.
Yeah, so just to remind the audience, I chose Final Fantasy 13, and I've been trying to, as you all have been making very good points, and I'm trying to kind of, I think it's like, it's a little bit of like a pendulum, and I think Zach hit the nail on the head with it, where technical graphics are really important to making sure that your game is like, it's kind of like the vehicle for making sure that your art stays fresh. Obviously, there are some games that just transcend technical, like the need for technical graphics, like Cuphead is a great example. Like, I think a rule of thumb is, I can't imagine a world where we'd remaster Cuphead. Like, I just don't, like, you know, it's intentional.
They'll remaster anything, man. They'll find,
I mean, they
somewhere.
Would, but where it would look any better, like, you know, Final Fantasy, like the, all of the Square Enix, like pixel, you know, well, not the pixel versions, but when Square Enix brought like Final Fantasy, like Chrono Trigger and all these other games to Steam, and they like redid the fonts and everything, and I know there was a lot of like backlash from like pure RPG purists being like, oh no, the font was the whole point of it. It's like, it's this,
you know, it was like fonts, and like there are some like filtering effects on the sprites, yeah, that like rounded them out, and there's like, yeah, some
just like
pixel CRT like filter stuff.
Yeah, it's like, it's not, that's not why we played the games, and I think that those styles still hold up. Whereas I think where tactical graphics really come into play, and to bring it back to the 360 and PS3, like, that was obviously a very big leap forward. I would argue, like, obviously the first, you know, PS1 to PS2, PS2 to PS3, those were very significant upgrades. And I think if you go back, I mean, okay, I take you at face value, like, I believe you that if you go back and play, like, Uncharted 2, it probably is not a very good look, like, doesn't look great nowadays. And I think that also of, like, games like Gears of War, like, at the time, it was the pinnacle. Like, if you had asked me a decade ago, if my math is right, maybe more than 15 years ago, what's the best looking game of all time? You know, I'd say Gears of War, right? But I wonder, does that game look that great? Or is it just like all the videos on YouTube are like decomposing? Because when I go back and try to grab screens for, you know, a Gears article or Gears 2, I'm like, oh, like, okay. But it's the art style that helps it stay fresh. And I think for me, Final Fantasy 13 is that kind of balance where if you look at like Final Fantasy 15 and 16, by the time they came out, they actually already looked dated, especially 16, given the fact that it's, correct me if I'm wrong, Kay. Isn't it based off the 14 engine that's being used for 16? Like, it comes off and it's very much, we're trying not to go
crazy on the visual. It kind of has like that Final Fantasy 14 like framing and stuff. Like the difference between Rebirth and 16 is quite stark. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, obviously 15 was kind of like technically a little bit of a disaster and it was obviously in development hell. So maybe not a fair comparison, but the tools were, you know, really hard to work with on that engine. 13 for me is just that perfect balance of like, I can come back to that and appreciate it. You might be able to remaster it and get a little more juice out of it like 5 years from now. But it's still that game that the colors, the character models, the art, the expressions, it was just, I think that was the sweet spot. And now it's just diminishing marginal returns on the technical front.
I agree with you there, David, especially I'm thinking about the Mass Effect games, which you guys know I love. But that Mass Effect 1, I think still looks pretty good. And I was still playing the original disc in my Xbox 360 and all of that until the remastered version came out. The remastered, like, which is the Legendary Edition, I think that looks great. It does look good. It's extra fun. But I still had the original disc. Like, it's just bonus. So I agree. Like, I think that was more of this money opportunity to bring in new people, get all the for the diehards like me, like, oh, how convenient. I don't have to like log around my old disc. And I was just happy to see, you know, my existing things. But one game, I was thinking of another franchise where you were talking, when we're talking about the sort of fidelity and graphic leaps. Sims 1 releases 2000 and Sims 4 came out 2014. And they're still operating off of the Sims 4 and adding more packs to that. Looking at the difference of those in those 14 years is nuts. And so I think as we think about like how these games are growing and what's that sort of peak and what's our standard, and kind of looping back to the beginning of my comment, which is that like, think about Mass Effect Andromeda, like those trailers, people ripped that game apart for like wonky facial animations. They ripped the game apart on initial launch. It's a lot of worlds without a lot going on. I do think that there's both a limit to how much the technical prowess can do. Like, I do think in some ways there's like a peak and now it's like finessing. It's better, but it's iterating on sort of the same moment. But there's also the flip side of that is we have base standards that we're expecting. And when games don't meet that, we kind of shred them.
Kay, you had another thing to add.
Yeah, I was just like thinking of like Mass Effect versus like Final Fantasy 13. I think it's kind of interesting. Like, Final Fantasy 13, the character models are very highly detailed, but one thing that you'll notice if you play the game like a lot or just, you know, are playing the game is like the fingers are blocks. Like, so all the characters, their hands, like their fingers don't like bend individually. All their fingers are very rectangular and blocky. So like they have like very obvious trade-offs in this like regard. And I think Square especially, and then I think, you know, not to generalize, to generalize a little bit, but some of the like Eastern studios have this sort of like visual style where everyone's like very, very pretty, like very aesthetically kind of like has like this sort of porcelain doll-esque kind of graphical style. And I think Square kind of pioneered that in the PS2, PS3 era. And then we're actually seeing this now in games like Throne of Liberty and Black Desert or Crimson Desert or The First Descendant, or maybe it's The Last Descendant. Don't sue me. Like, all those games have this like very sort of like, everyone is an extremely pale, like symmetrical appearance, sort of vibe to it. And I think that really worked well in Final Fantasy 13. And then like comparatively, games like Mass Effect, Western Studios had a bit more of a less like pristine visual look to them. They aim for some like a look that people, you know, that maybe would be a little bit more analogous to like real life. And I think that also like suited those games well, especially games like Mass Effect, where developing, you know, connections with your party members is paramount, and there's like a lot of space for player self-expression. And then obviously insofar as that there is a player avatar, that sort of element of it is present as well.
I think it's interesting that you bring up the use you know, Final Fantasy as an example of like the pristine look, and I think it's notable that Square went the kind of the opposite direction later on with 15 and 16. They kind of, especially 15, they made a point out of saying like, no, we want our characters to be flawed. So like Noctis had like pimples or little like acne scar, like scars on his
face. He had a birthmark. Okay. He was still like a gorgeous man.
No, of course. But the point remains that I think what I'm getting at is, and what I think you're pointing out is, sometimes there's this obsession with like perfection, and it like in the sake of like realism, and it kind of has the opposite impact where it's like, these people aren't actually realistic. They're like, they look like gods. Right. And I think this is something that Sam, you said a while ago, Sam, that I forget when, probably maybe on the site just casually, but I know you kind of, the word immersion is like a trigger word for you. Like it's the idea that I think when we get like the marketing buzz, someone says, oh, it's like, it's so immersive. If someone describes it in a review, a game is immersive. Like I get what the word means, right? It's like when I'm playing The Last of Us 2, I am immersed in the experience because the graphics are so, you know, cutting edge. But I think to your point, that doesn't necessarily make it compelling.
And it really makes you feel like Spider-Man.
Like, I'm just curious to, I would love for you to like talk about that perspective here, Sam, because I find it fascinating.
Yeah, so I'd say generally speaking, the things that make me feel immersed in a game are mechanics and systems. For example, I played Oblivion for the first time just a few years ago, and that game it looks pretty terrible now, but like the fact that you can just turn into a vampire and that means that you can't go outside during the day, that is an immersive quality for me. But an interesting thing that's kind of been brought up that relates to that is, we talk a lot about these little visual details of their faces look like this, their hands look like that, the environments look different. I think as we're getting further and further away from like the blocky, you know, PS1 era graphics, these strides, these advancements in visual capabilities aren't really having that much of an effect on gameplay anymore. It used to be, for example, the example I'll give is LA Noire, where they use mocap and I could look at someone's face and try to tell if they're lying or if they're not fully telling me everything when I'm doing these investigations and these interrogations. And that's something that you simply just could not have done 5-10 years prior. That was just simply impossible. But because of the new graphical capabilities, now an entire new type of game can happen, even though it didn't really happen that much after that. And I think similarly of a recent example of a game that I'm pretty sure I'm the only person who played on the site, Hellblade 2, where the graphics are incredible, they're so detailed, but a huge part of that game is Senua not knowing, and other characters not knowing what's real and what's fully imagined in her head. So when you're a player, if the real and the not real objects look identical in quality, that to me contributes a lot to the immersion of that experience. And there's ways to do that. But when you're just playing like God of War Ragnarok or something, now that's just, oh, this looks better, but you're not, it doesn't give you more things to do. It's not actually fundamentally changing the experience.
Okay, so then what do you guys think of a game like Detroit Become Human, right? Like, I didn't...
Trash.
Like, trash. Like, I didn't play it, but, like, is that a game that we're supposed to be like, they're real people, and now...
Absolutely not trash, by the way. Just...
Okay, well, that'll be otherwise a 20-minute conversation, minimum. But, like, think about that with, like, I think that's such a great point, Sam, about the LA Noire thing, and I'm wondering, is that game an example of something where, like, the mocap, the peopleness of it has an effect?
I mean, I'm mostly just teasing David. I've never played Detroit Become Human, but Everyone has a lot to say here. Everyone's raising their
hand.
Well,
I just have a quick thing. Okay. I don't even think the mocap in L.A. Noire worked very well, for what it's worth.
No, like, sometimes because like someone would like just give a big frown after they clearly told a lie.
Right. But, so I think it was kind of an empty promise. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if gaming was ever going in the direction of like, yeah, like the visuals. Like,
but it could, is my point. That could. There's a way this could happen. And sure. If people haven't made good on that promise. Right. But first Vaughn, then Zach. Everyone's really excited to talk, and I love it. But we'll go Vaughn, then Zach. Vaughn, what do you got?
Okay, I'm going to follow up on that last, you know, segment there. Yeah, I feel like that genre of games, though, was like a PS3, PS4 genre of games. Like, it got started in PS3. It's like, oh, we're going to make, like, with Heavy Rain, we're going to make all these games that are just narrative decisions. And then people quickly got burned out. Like, you know, you did Heavy Rain, you did Beyond Two Souls, L.A. Noire. Trying to think. Those are like the first three that come to mind.
All the Telltale games, too.
All the Telltale games, yeah.
I think the Telltale games being not photorealistic actually contributes to their like relative longevity compared to those, but that's sort of a different story.
No, I agree. But Sam, you brought up a point about like graphics playing like a role in the gameplay. And like, yeah, we don't see that a lot. I mean, that's why my perfect game is probably Nier Automata. Graphically, gameplay wise, and I guess everything else we've mentioned, because it gives me my PS1 era gameplay interaction without the blockiness, but you still get like the 2D aspects where the screen goes flat and you're running through zones. Like, that is cool. That is a technical feat, because it keeps the game, because the game's like, you know, frames per second don't change when that happens, but everything's still running well. The graphics still look great on a 2D screen. Like, give me that, and you get Zach's environmental interaction. That's perfect for me. If every game is like that, we can call that peak.
Yeah, Sam, I think you said it better than I could, as far as just kind of when does the graphical improvement actually lead to mechanical improvement. But the L.A. Noire is such a great example, because to David's point too, I think it had a promise that it just did not quite keep. Because the thought of it is so cool. It's like, we've reached the point where you can now get these photorealistic, the facial expressions, and you know someone's lying, and I still sucked. I couldn't do it ever. I never got it right, you know? And then, so I think I would love to see that get a refresh. I know it came out again. I don't know if it was even a remaster. It was just kind of a re-release, but I'd love to see a sequel, like a proper sequel, and see if there has been kind of an advancement in that technology. Because I thought that promise was so cool, and it's such a great game. But real quick, I'll just say my example for this is very silly, but the peak for me was Mario Kart. I could not compete in Mario Kart up until Mario Kart Wii, because the graphics, the distance, especially on a 4-box where you're trying to compete and make those tight turns, I couldn't see a damn thing, even like up to Double Dash. So that was like the breaking point for me. I was like, once the Wii came out, I poured so much time into Mario Kart Wii. Of course, not the wheel. Don't even get me started on the wheel. But that was like a point for me where I could play racing games, because they actually made sense and I could see where the hell I was going. So anything on top of that's just been gravy. But before that, I could not play a Mario Kart game to save my life, because I was like, where am I turning?
All right, we got a thought from Kay. Then I want to kind of pivot to something else.
Yeah, sure. We can wrap on this topic. I do think, like, you know, for the most part, people are right about like the graphical fidelity not always translating to like mechanical changes. I just like, I do think there is a space for like just admitting that like it mainly has gains in other areas. Like, I think as an example, we've kind of gone back to The Last of Us as a game, and I think The Last of Us is controversial for, you know, a variety of reasons, but like this is a spoiler for the first game, so I'm just gonna, you know, little warning there, I'm gonna go into it now, but I think as an example, the final like most emotional impacting moment of The Last of Us, right, this final scene where Ellie is just staring at Joel and then she says okay, like that is a scene that doesn't work on an SNES or a PS1. It just doesn't, because you actually need the graphical fidelity to capture Ellie's like facial expressions, you know, how torn she is, how much she trusts and loves Joel versus what kind of person she knows Joel actually is. Like, that emotional Touchstone just doesn't work if it's like an SNES game. Like obviously if it's a novel, it could work, right? But that's not the medium. And I think certainly there are arguments to say that like video games that seek to emulate movies are kind of like doing the worst of both worlds, right? I totally understand that point. But I do think, you know, there is a point to be said about the graphical fidelity. It gives you gains in other areas that don't necessarily relate to mechanics. I think, for example, I brought up like Yakuza Judgment. I think those games without this sort of like facial capture technology are significantly less compelling. Gameplay wise, honestly, I think they are fine beat 'em ups. They're just okay, you know? And I think if they didn't have this level of like fidelity backing up the actual dramatic backbones of the story, I don't think people would be as interested in them for the most part. So I agree. Like, it's not always mechanical, I think, but that is not always the end all be all. And I know that's kind of weird because I tend to be somewhat of a gameplay oriented player person. But you know, I think ultimately there are gains to be made in other places, and I think it reflects sometimes, you know, interestingly. And I think Sony tends to be trying to push the envelope in this regard, not always to their benefit, but regardless, that was just my final point about you know, the fidelity, mechanics, game, story, interaction.
Yeah, and it's a good one. I'm glad you brought The Last of Us for this particular pivot point. The Last of Us has been remastered and it's been remade, and every time, but it's one of those things where both times that happened, we're like, okay, it looks a little bit better, but you're still largely doing the same thing. It looks largely the same. For a lot of remakes, we see studios kind of overhaul major graphical components, sometimes in a way to update it or, I guess, reimagine it for modern audiences. But then you fundamentally change things. An example, I wrote down in here how like the Metal Gear Solid Delta remake looks like how they would make a Metal Gear game now. But like the greenness, like that kind of filter from the original Metal Gear Solid 3, you lose that. And like that seemed, at least at the time, during the PS2 era, you had to be a little more creative with how you did visuals. And that was a way of making it work better for that platform. But also there's an artistic intent behind it. Another example for me, my favorite game is The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time. I still prefer the Nintendo 64 version to the Nintendo 3DS version because it's darker and more drab. And I think it lends itself better to some of the themes of time and decay. And you lose a little bit of that with the 3DS remake, but that's not how everyone feels. And so I guess I just want to throw it out to the room. Like, do you think when we make when we remake these games and make these visual changes, I guess, let me rephrase that. What visual changes do you think are acceptable or not acceptable when you see these remakes? David, you got something to say about this?
Yeah, so, you know, it's funny. I think it comes down, not to use the word that we're using a lot here, but I think it comes down to, like, artistic direction, right? And I think it comes back to the team. And keep in mind that the team that often does a remaster or a remake isn't necessarily the same team that handled the original game. So I think, like, Majora's Mask and Ocarina of Time on the 3DS are good examples because Studio Grezzo did both of those, I believe, right? And yes. So I'm a fan of those. I mean, I totally get where you're coming from. It kind of takes away from like the darkness of those games in some respect to have a lot of like the more frilly particle effects on the 3DS hardware. But I appreciate the fact that they didn't just think like, we're just going to up-res all the, you know, the textures or whatever and just slap it on the cartridge and here you go. I appreciate the fact that they went in a different direction. I could also cite like the Wind Waker, where, again, I might be misremembering what the original Wind Waker like looked like, but I know that the Wii U version feels like such a distinct departure while still maintaining the essence of what that game is. And I think that basically, as long as people are taking risks, teams are taking risks and trying to give us a new spin on something, I'm cool with it. Where it goes out the window is just kind of like shameless cash grabs. Like, why was this remastered, right? What was the latest example? I feel like, wasn't there a game this week where people are trying to figure out the PS5, you know, Pro, how these two games are different and like splitting hairs over it. That's where I'm like, okay.
Because I know we also had a podcast about remakes and remasters and all that a while back. But like,
and I don't, so I don't want to turn this into a discussion of like what makes a good remake or a good remaster, but it just goes to show that a big part of remakes and remasters is making these visual changes and kind of realizing in real time when they happen, is this actually what I wanted, or is there an artistic intent behind this to actually improve it, or is there this flattening of visual standards that thus takes some of the unique flair from these older games? Vaughn, then Amanda, what'd you have to say about that?
I think talking about art direction, as David brought up, is really important. I think Darkness is a really good example to use when we talk about, you know, remasters or just direction when it comes to these remakes. Like, you look at, like, I'm going to use Dead Space. Clint's not here because, you know, I got to stand up for the horror game. You look at Dead Space. I didn't play the original, but, like, I watched enough of it. I watched someone play 1 and 2. The new one's, like, darker. It's more cinematic, but, like, it's physically darker than the old game was, and that's a directional choice, art directional choice. But as far as gameplay goes, it plays pretty much, at least what I've seen and what I've seen people talk about, it plays pretty much like the original. The best gun is the best gun from the original version. I won't say which for spoiler purposes, but I think darkness is a great aspect when we talk about, darkness saturation, when we talk about some of these games, like Control, great use of saturation in darkness as far as art direction, graphic fidelity. And then we look at, you know, I feel like I don't want to be the person to mention Dark Souls, but it does work here. Dark Souls 2, you know, we talked about earlier about the graphical component and the gameplay. I guess in the original, you know, concept for that game, darkness and using torches was more involved. But then they pivoted, they moved away from that. But that's why you end up with this game that's so dark. It's because they thought, oh, everyone's going to need torches to navigate everything. And they're like, nah, we're just going to make a regular Dark Souls game. And we left this dark saturation in. So now you're all going to be frustrated and complain when you fall to your deaths 10,000 times. So...
Amanda.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about horror games too, so I love that you brought that up, Vaughn, especially since I don't really play horror games, but I admire them from afar, like so afar. But I was thinking about Bioshock, like that's a great game that had like great art direction, great musical direction, great, like, and there's so much like of the shadows of like the dirtiness. I wonder what it would be like to play like a remastered or remake. Another game I'm thinking about is Stardew Valley, that's like massively popular. It's not a remake, but it is a pretty clean lift from the Game Boy Advance, like Game Boy eras of the Harvest Moon games. And those are games that are still very charming. Like Stardew Valley has been able to utilize that art style in a very effective way. You can make more with it, you can just do more. And then obviously we could talk forever about Final Fantasy VII, you know, that remake choice. But yeah, I think, I don't know, it's a really interesting thought of like how does gameplay and the art direction, how it evolves with remakes, if at all. What do you think, Kai? I mean, you're a Final Fantasy super fan. Are you gonna bring up seven?
I was just gonna say, like, you know, when people talk about like remakes and, you know, excluding the category that is like we are just like taking the original textures, just like upscaling them and like replacing them, excluding that category of like, you know, remake, remaster, whatever you want to call it, like it's kind of like translating a novel. You know, I think Jay Rubin, Haruki Murakami's like main translator, he's done the large bulk of them, like he said, like, I'm writing these books, like you're reading my writing, like that's kind of like, and I kind of view it the same way. If you as a different studio are remaking a game like kind of from the ground up, all the lighting changes, the angle changes, like these, that's your direction, right? You have to kind of own that. And I think we've seen that, like, you know, in like, you know, people criticizing Delta, MGS Delta for the sort of changes it's undergone. Like, obviously, Kojima is probably one of the more, or maybe the most, like, you know, finicky. He is certainly a cinemaphile, you know, so he cares a lot about that aspect of these games, and he's, like, not involved in Delta. And so anything that this other studio is doing, it's like, we don't know how, you know, deliberate they're being about these changes, and it changes so much. Like, I think Bluepoint got a lot of flack, both doing Shadow of the Colossus and Demon's Souls, because they changed a lot of aspects that people felt were very fundamental to the experience. Like, you know, Flame Lurker in the first trailer, when they revealed that people were losing their minds because he like went from sort of this, his original appearance to kind of like, you know, more of like a Balrog-esque, not the Street Fighter character, but the Lord of the Rings one, like appearance, and that like, you know,
I bet someone's already probably modded Balrog from Street Fighter.
Yeah, into the game. Yeah. It's just like, you know, this idea that like, oh, it's the same game, but everything's just like sharper and like, you know, we use new models, but it doesn't really work like that. You kind of have to own every single change. So I don't really know where I was going with that, I guess. I was just like saying that like any sort of graphical overhaul, you're really changing everything about the game. You really have to be deliberate about it, I think. And I think sometimes these companies are not. Like, I think Demon's Souls was one where it was like a little bit less deliberate. And then Shadow of the Colossus was one where Bluepoint kind of hedged a little bit because they added a lot of filters to the game that sort of mimicked the original style. And it wasn't perfect, but I think that I appreciated it more than I think the what ended up happening with Demon's Souls, where Demon's Souls now is just, it's so polished looking. It feels honestly very different to me. Maybe that's just, again, a sort of nostalgia factor. I think a lot of the time we talk about these games without actually having revisited them in specifics. I haven't actually replayed Demon's Souls in 10 years. So, you know, we are all prone to those selection biases. But and Amanda, you want to say?
Well, I was curious about the Silent Hill 2 remake that just came out earlier this year. And so I just, while we were sitting here, I was just Googling. And because I was curious, I think, Kay, that's such a good point about like the new team being the one to own it and to like have to take ownership of that. And I think that's part of why the Final Fantasy VII like remake process has been so interesting, because it's so much of the original team. So I was curious about Silent Hill 2. And I found this Twitter thread or X thread with, I'm going to mess up his name, Masashi Tsubayama, sorry in advance or for the past of what I just said, but he was the director of the original Silent Hill 2, and I just want to read a quote from him about this, and this is what he says about Bloober's remake. Games and technology are constantly evolving, resulting in significant differences in constraints and levels of expression. This is a common issue with media arts in general, but it is not easy to maintain and appreciate the environment of the time. I think the value of the remake is that a new generation can play it. As a creator, I'm very happy about it. It's been 23 years. Even if you don't know the original, you can just enjoy the remake as it is. Then he says some other things. And then I think this part is really interesting. The thing to note is the change in camera perspective. The change in playable camera has a significant impact on many aspects, combat, level design, art creation, etc. While the impact on the changes of story may be relatively small, it brings a big change to the play feel of the game. And then he says, the over-the-shoulder view definitely adds to the sense of realism. In other words, it makes me want to try playing the even more immersive remake of Silent Hill 2. So I think just as we think about it, it's not even just the visuals, but also the changes that can come with it in gameplay.
Yeah. I'm curious, because that is a good point about, like, we've all kind of agreed that, like, you change one thing of the visuals, you might change everything. But for someone who's not always, again, up to date, Zach, you don't have a PS5, you're not, maybe not, aren't playing these big HD remasters. What's your take on this kind of topic?
Well, I just picked up Metroid Prime Remastered at the recommendation of some of the group here and folks on our Discord. So that's a good example for me is I never played it. Well, actually, I did play it as a kid and I sucked at it so bad that I put it down and got rid of it and threw it into the fire. So I'm excited to go back to it. And I think the visual component that I've seen online is amazing. I mean, just you look at kind of the before and after, you know, and it just, it looks better, but I think it also does play better. And I've read that there's been an update there, but for me, I guess what it boils down to, and a lot of this is just kind of, I like to see things that, you know, kind of, it's silly, but to my Mario Kart point, like, as long as it's cleaner, as long as things are sharper and, you know, I can actually see where I'm going or have a renewed focus and kind of that clarity, I guess, that's what I'm looking for most. And I, you know, you've all brought up, you know, different examples and good examples of like, hey, tweaks that didn't quite land for me. But I can't think of something personally that has kind of been remastered that I was like, oh, I wish that they kept it the same. To David's point earlier about Cuphead, I was like, we didn't really need to remaster Paper Mario 1000 Year Door. That felt like a stretch, but it looks better. And, you know, I'm not upset about it. You can even, like, toggle between some of the music and stuff. So I think, you know, it's mostly for the better. A lot of it, like we've all kind of been saying, is just like, it looks better. It looks sharper. It's cleaner. It's easier to navigate. And there's maybe some, like, little tweaks to maps and stuff like that I think is generally helpful. So you know, I think besides it most of the time being a cash grab, I'm in favor of the remasters that clean things up.
Cool. I got a couple more topics I want to get to before we finish up. One, we've been talking a lot about the big AAA games, and I want to go more towards what indies are able to do. And that's obviously a big, you know, indie could mean any number of things. Like technically Baldur's Gate 3 is an indie, but I'm not counting that here. And same, we, Dave and I get in this, you know, argument all the time about Dave the Diver. It's not indie, it's owned by a large Korean corporation. But when we talk about indies working on totally different budgets, what's the best thing that these studios can do to stand out visually? Just because it's so difficult. If you're an indie, you have to have something really striking visually, because you can't make it look real when you have a team of 15 people. Dave, what do you think about that?
Yeah, so I think I'm curious to get, this might not be exactly what you're looking for, because I know there are plenty of indie developers that don't subscribe to kind of the pixel art style. I know Amanda used the example of Stardew Valley, which is, you know, obviously a style that's used very effectively. I would also, to double down on that, I think sometimes there's a lot of respect among indie developers when, I think part of the allure of older games was the constraints that people had, whether it's musically, whether it's artistically, right? You could only have certain color palettes. You could only have certain sounds that play, you know, only two sounds could play at the same time, or one sound, right? Like, and to shout out a game, you know, my current game of the year frontrunner, UFO 50, which I'll keep beating the drum about. The team there, when they crafted the 50 games in that collection, they limited themselves to like a single like color palette. And they just had like whatever the 8-bit, I don't know the technical term for it, but they had, I don't know, probably like 20-ish colors. And they just go back to that to help give ground their work in the same kind of, give it a sense of continuity from one title to the other. And you see the same thing sonically too, with sound effects and things of that nature. So I think there are ways that developers can challenge themselves on the indie perspective to do more with less. And I think oftentimes from an artistic standpoint, that actually speaks volumes.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think you brought up sort of an interesting statement. And also this was like a topic we touched upon earlier. I actually think maybe now this paradigm is shifting. You mentioned that there are no like realistic games that are developed with like 15 people, but obviously Hellblade 2 is such an example. And we talked about this earlier. I actually think like in this current, like with how powerful like Unreal has gotten in particular, like I think we see also like a lot of like solo dev or very small team projects from the Asian region that are like very, very graphically intensive and realistic. You know, Lost Soul Aside is one. There are a couple other ones that like did not review particularly well. I can't remember them off the top of my head, but like they look very impressive, but they're not, they didn't end up playing very well. But I actually think in this current like period of time, it's kind of the opposite. I think we've hit a point where even small teams can make very visually realistic kind of demanding games. I think this idea that like indie games were like very, very restricted by constraints kind of is maybe like half a generation ago or more, kind of. Not to like directly call it this point. I think the overall point is still salient, but I just think that paradigm specifically is shifting kind of like right now, kind of like under our feet, so to speak.
I know Zach. I think we're on the same page there, right? It's like, I think some developers are choosing to limit themselves creatively, but it's cool to know that there are multiple avenues that you could do, like the minimalist style, like more of like the Animal Well, the UFO 50s of the world, Stardew Valleys, or you go Lost Soul Aside and
yeah. Absolutely. Gonzo. I mean, I think at this point, I like kind of view that like slick Unreal Engine 5 demo visual style as its own visual style, like Lost Soul Aside being this like very, you know, that game has like a very Unreal 5 engine aesthetic to me, you know, and that's, you know, for good or for ill, that's kind of what it looks like. But anyway, I cut Zach off, so.
No. I think that for me, I sort of, you know, mentioned it earlier, but whether it's a big studio or not, I think that there's so many more interesting ways to set yourself apart visually. I mean, even something like Yoshi's Woolly World, Crafted World, like those games draw me in because it's like, okay, what's going on here? It's a little different. It's a little more fun. And then I think of other games like, I mean, Tearaway was kind of in that same mold. I played a game called Puppeteer. I don't know if that like was popular, but it's like, it's almost in the Thousand Year Door style of like, it's like a stage play and there's like a narrator and stuff like that and kind of cutesy, interesting art. I'm thinking of The Big Con, which Amanda and I talked about. I saw it from afar at PAX this year, and it was like this, it was like Doug, the TV show Doug, and it was just this cool 90s kind of hand-drawn vibe. And this game called Blanc that was like you're a little deer and a wolf cub, and it's like this black and white. So I'm just kind of, you know, throwing all kinds of stuff. But to me, it's, I get so much more interested in stuff like that these days. And whether it's your Cupheads of the world or whatever else that are really setting themselves apart. This game, I think it's Harold Halibut that Amanda and I, we talked about briefly too. It's like all claymation. And I haven't had a chance to dig in, but I'm like, that is so cool. You know, I don't see that every day. And even if the game stinks, which I don't know if it got great reviews, but we will keep that separate. Like, I'm interested. I might still dig in because it just seems so cool, so unique. David's telling me it reviewed well, so I don't put any bad juju out there. But yeah, I think that for me, you know, whether it's the AAAs or not, indie, whoever, I just want to see something unique, and I don't need it to be like I'm playing a movie. I want like what's next and what's kind of fun and different. That's what's exciting for me.
All right, we got Vaughn, we got Amanda, and then I'm going to pivot to something else. But Vaughn, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think I love the indies because of the art direction. Like, I think that's going to be the key theme here. I mean, I look at Hollow Knight, which is a game that will age beautifully for like the next like two centuries probably, and then we'll be like, oh, Hollow Knight, that's a great looking game. The concept art for Hollow Knight is Hollow Knight. Like, I can't imagine they're too far apart, right? Like, and that's why I love the indie games that are art direction. For art direction style, right? Like, I'm a big like kid at heart, so I love animation. So 2D games, that's me all day. But I think we look like not indie games. If you look at like Final Fantasy series, which has swung from being like a Nintendo beloved to like a Sony beloved, they've always pushed the highest graphical fidelity, right? Like, in the beginning, it was Nintendo. So you see, as they move through the years, you got these beautiful 2D renditions. Well, not so beautiful now. Of like what they thought was the best graphical output. But if you look at the concept art from like those first 6, 7, 8 games, that's honestly where the beauty of those games were, the concept art. Like, if they were able to animate that concept art, I would love to see what that style would look like. Because it would just be a whole new world of games we haven't seen.
Amanda.
Yeah, I think similarly to the concept art, a studio that comes to mind is Supergiant. Like, they have such a specific artistic style and vision, and they've honed that over many games. I mean, Hades is, you know, was a big game of the year. Like, the beautiful art, the gameplay so fun, but you could see that even in their earlier games. I will always talk about this game, Pyre. It was their game right before Hades. But if you play Pyre, like, you can see a lot of what they ended up doing with Hades. Like, you see it, it's the character, it's the portrait, it's the way there's like this sort of cell shading art that's happening in the actual action. And I think that's a great example of a studio that's really been like, this is our look, and we're just going to keep honing our vision. And then there's another game I'm thinking of that is to date the ugliest game I have ever played, which is The Case of the Golden Idol. Just absolutely heinous artwork. Like, but that's part of it. Yes. Like, they're gonna make these criminals, like these characters game. That you interview, like, so ugly, like to the point that I'm like, ugh, like, I'm upset. Like, I don't want to look at this. Like, why is everyone?
Disco Elysium as has that vibe.
Yeah. Some people look really bad. Like, and I think there's something about that though that makes it. I think it's thematically tied in into it. And so I agree. I think with the indie games, what we're saying is it's this opportunity for studios, for teams, for even one person sometimes to really go, this is the vision that I want to work on and make a reality. And I think that is really exciting to see.
Yeah. And I think that's something that you get from indies that you don't get from the big boys quite as much, where you get them either deliberately making something look unsettling and bad or just being creative and out there. But the last question I have for this segment before we get into something fun, well, it's all fun, some fun in a different way. Do you think, I think we will, before I ask this question, I think the answer is yes. Do you think we'll reach an uncanny valley point with graphical fidelity, aka a point where the graphics look so realistic it's kind of unsettling and weird to look at? Seems like everyone's thinking for a second. Kay?
I think in the sense that most of the time people have control over what they release. I don't think we're ever going to see, you know, the AAA people release something that looks horrible, right? Like, they may, like, people may test like Gen AI animation and then they'll realize it looks like shit, or maybe it'll look incredible, you know, whatever the case may be. Like, I do think there is a bit of an uncanny valley effect for me, just like, and I've referenced this before, it's just like people that are like too beautiful, like when everyone in the game looks too beautiful and it's like not necessarily an acknowledged part of the game, that throws me off. Like, an example where it is somewhat rationalized in universe, for example, is like in Nier Automata, the characters are androids. So they are meant to look, they have symmetrical faces because they are creations, right? They are synthetic creations. You know, other times that doesn't necessarily happen. And then so like, I think that's kind of the uncanny valley for me exists in that zone where I'm like, these characters are not relatable at all because they are almost they're otherworldly or almost ethereal like in a way that is not not good, I guess, is kind of where I'm at. I don't know if we will ever reach a point where, like, I think some people maybe feel this way about like Horizon or whatever, but I don't think we're gonna reach a point where like it's a 50-50 split on people just being like, oh, really turned off by like the way Aloy looks in Horizon 3 or something like that.
All right, Amanda, then Zach.
Yeah, I was thinking there was a, I remember distinctly being in this, remember being in a post exchange, which is a PX on an army base. It's like the only kind of stores that we would have, you know, you don't really have a mall. You just have this like one store, and I'm begging my dad to get me, I want to say it was a Nintendo 64, and like, I'm begging him to get me these other video game sets. And he's like, I'll get you one of those video game sets when games look so real that it's like you're actually, you know, controlling this, like, almost like real-time visuals. Like, when it gets so good. And I was like, it's going to be so soon. You're going to get me the next thing. Like, it's going to happen. And he was like, okay, you know. And literally every couple of years, I send him a screenshot of, like, it's often Final Fantasy being like, look at this. Look how real it looks. And he's like, it's not yet. It's not yet. And I'm like, but we're getting closer. So I do think we will. And I think it, I mean, I don't know. I've been saying that for 20 years. So we'll see. But I really do think we're closer than we've been.
Yeah, and when I say at some point, this could be 50 years from now. I'm just saying.
Oh, like, no, I hope not. I want him to buy me that game set.
Optimistic of you to think we're going to be around in 50
yeah,
years.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's a different, yeah. All right, but sorry, Zach, go ahead.
No, I mean, I think that's kind of what I've been saying in, you know, pieces here is like, I feel like we're almost there. I don't know. Like, I guess it's not so much, maybe it's a slightly different point for me, which is like, you know, it's not that I am fooled or it's like too realistic, but it's almost that when you try to get that realistic and you're not quite there, that's when it like really goes off the rails, kind of to my like Uncharted point. It's like, we're trying to make it so Nathan Drake's interacting with the environment. So when it doesn't work, it really just feels so off base. And, you know, there's like different games where like the hair is messed up and it just takes you out of it. It's like hair, you know, different kind of like blinking or stuff like that can be so close but not quite there that you're like, just no thank you, get me out of here, like I don't want to watch this, it's too weird. So I don't know if that's exactly the point of like it's so realistic it's creepy. It's almost just like we're not quite there, and I don't know if I want us to get there or not, but it's something about it that it just, you know, Mario and his goofy, you know, doughy face is never gonna bother me with his like with his catchphrases and bouncing off the walls. Like, that's fine. I can deal with that no matter what.
Yeah. And when I say it, like, that's a good point about like when it looks so realistic, everything that's not real looks extra not real and weird. It reminds me of the first time I actually heard this term, Uncanny Valley, was to describe like a slate of Robert Zemeckis movies, like The Polar Express and Beowulf, that like, they looked like real people until they actually like moved their mouths and they looked extremely not real in those moments. David and Cable have something to say. David, go for it.
Yeah, I'll be quick. my one thing is, I think as long as the developers, studios keep investing in like up-to-date motion capture, I think that's where the difference is. As long as like the technical aspects of the visuals, like the human, when I think on Uncanny Valley, I always think humans, right? I think we can get to photorealistic, you know, backgrounds, vistas pretty easily, to be honest. I think that's, it's kind of already happening. I think there's a lot of like horror games or like flight sim. Honestly, I don't know how they do their visuals in flight sim, but that's damn near photorealistic if you ask me. But
I see more of the sun in video games than like the real sun.
Yeah, same. But I feel like from a person perspective, I think it's only, and Kay might disagree with me here, but I know we've gone back and forth on kind of the example of like, I plus one 100% the importance of like great motion capture to something like The Last of Us. And then in something like Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, that's where the a little more uncanny valley for me that we've already experienced, because I'm sure they had some degree of, I don't want to talk out my ass here, but I feel like the, it just feels a little like less there for me. Like I just don't, and maybe it has to do with the purity thing that Kay already mentioned. It's like, I'm looking at these characters and I'm like, I don't believe I'm here. And that's kind of the point, and that's fine because Cloud's also a super soldier who can, you know, jump 100 feet seemingly at random whenever Sephiroth's in the room with him. So it's not the biggest deal in the world, even if we do have a little uncanny valley, but for the games where it really matters, like I need to believe the performance because it's fundamentally human and it's something that could apply to me, like a zombie apocalypse. Like I hope studios continue to invest in motion capture.
Okay, do you have anything to add to that, or you just want to talk about the sun?
No, I was just like, I was just gonna make this like final point. I do think sometimes it's like, I think in Rebirth, something people are talking about, there's CGI cutscenes in Rebirth and in-engine facial capture cutscenes. And I actually think the facial capture cutscenes look better than the CGI like FMV style cutscenes. One thing that happens is that they use slightly different models. Like I think Tifa has a different model in the CGI than her in-engine model. And so like you can kind of tell the difference there, but like that CGI is actually uncanny valley to me. And then the in-engine actually looks good. But I've seen a lot of people, like I've seen it kind of split opinion where some people say it's the other way around. So I mean, maybe we're already there. But I think to your point, David, I just think one of the things I don't know, everyone in Final Fantasy is so beautiful. Barrett, like when Barrett took off his sunglasses in a remake, I was like, oh my god, like it was insane. I don't know. So like I think that's an element of it being somewhat unrelatable to me. Like when they like do like a slow zoom in on Aerith's like face and I can see like every single like little particle in her pupil, I'm like, this is too much for me. Like I was also just
gonna say Barrett has a gun for an arm too, for what it's worth.
Yeah, and it looks amazing. Vaughn.
So beautiful.
Yeah, I would say yes, we'll get to that point to answer the question, but I would say like why? Like, you know, I think a good example is in God of War, like they've had the same like combat designer with Jason McDonald. And he talks about how in the original God of War they couldn't do things that they can do now in God of War Ragnarok. Because like before, you know, we were limited by like the, you know, graphical capabilities, the power that we had. So we're just talking about like visual looks. How much power will it take to get a game to look like a real life human? And then what are we achieving gameplay wise? Because if we're not jumping like Cloud 100 feet to fight Sephiroth like in every single second of the game, then like what are we doing?
Yeah, no, that's a great final point here. I think we're gonna put an end to that side of this podcast and go into, I call it a quick who you got section, but it's really just head to head. We're not doing a whole bracket, we're just doing head to head, lightning round style. Everyone just kind of throw out your answers when I ask. Thank you to Amanda for adding a bunch of extra stuff. So we're going to start. Who you got? Toon Link, like Wind Waker Link, versus Twilight Princess Link. Anybody just answer whatever you got there.
Twilight Princess. Yeah.
Wow. That's surprising.
Toon Link. I'll take Toon Link.
Are we doing Link visually? What are we doing?
Visuals. That's the theme of the podcast, no. David. No, art visuals. Visuals.
Twilight Princess Link is the coolest Link. He's based. Link of all time. So
he's peak Link.
When he saves Colin and knocks King Bubbling off the bridge and strikes that pose at the sunset, sickest moment of all time.
Yeah, but you don't. But didn't any of you cry when like Wind Waker Link has to say goodbye to his grandma and that like, no, cute, I, like cute round
no.
face?
No.
Oh, you heartless ghoul. All right, next up. Dragon Age Inquisition art style versus Dragon Age The Veilguard style. A little more cartoon.
Inquisition hands down for me. So good. I was so disappointed.
I'll go Veilguard.
Yeah.
I'll go Veilguard. I haven't played enough of either of the game.
I think Inquisition as well for me.
I'm going to go Inquisition, yeah.
I think they both look terrible. Elden Ring.
You shut your mouth, Sam.
we didn't even get to answer.
Zach, what do you think? You seem like you got nothing though.
No, I'm still stuck on Toon Link versus Twilight Princess Link, if we're being honest. I think when I was a kid, I was so snobby when Wind Waker came out. I was like, this guy, what is this, baby game? Like, I don't want to play this.
No, I was too. I saw the light later in life. It was my biggest regret in life that I didn't actually play Wind Waker on GameCube.
Yeah, I was big into Twilight Princess, so it kind of goes against what I've been saying this whole podcast. I was worried. It's a house of cards. But still, it's still cartoony. Twilight Princess always has a special place. I think it's underrated, so I got to go with that. I haven't played Dragon Age, so I don't know. I'm stuck on Link.
The thing with Twilight Princess is that everyone other than Midna, Zelda, Link, and Ganondorf looks horrible. They have like the most messed up facial proportions. Ilya's forehead is like 2/3 the size of her face. There's like a baby 9-year-old, like a 9-year-old, what's his name? Collins' younger brother, whatever, starts with an M. That guy is like a messed up face.
His name is pronounced, this is a lightning round, okay, we're moving on. Elden Ring art direction versus Bloodborne art direction.
Bloodborne, that moon, unbeatable.
Going Elden Ring.
Elden Ring.
Elden Ring.
My dog is growling for Elden Ring.
No, wait, I'm switching back to Bloodborne. Bloodborne. Final answer, Regis.
Okay, all right. Halo versus Destiny.
Halo.
Destiny for me.
Definitely Halo. I mean, the aliens take it over the art. Like, yeah, Halo.
Oh, I'll go Destiny, yeah. But recency bias.
Well, recency bias should be Halo because the most recent game in either of those.
Destiny 2 is a live service game that is constantly being updated. So,
are you still playing it?
Yeah, I played it a week ago. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Then Halo Infinite is also sort of a live service game. All right, so these next four are Amanda's contributions here. So if you don't like them, you could all blame her.
Oh my god.
Pikachu in Pokemon Yellow versus Detective Pikachu movie, not the game.
Pokemon
gotta
Yellow.
Go yellow.
Gotta go.
The other one talks and is Ryan Reynolds.
I think Detective Pikachu.
He looks so cute. He does look so soft in the movie. Like I just
he does look fuzzy.
I don't really like the fat Pikachu.
He is, oh, that was the other thing. If we had more time, I would make us go back through. He's so chonk. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I do. I'm a sucker for it. What about you, Zach? What do you think? Or name your favorite Pikachu ever.
No, well, when you were talking Detective Pikachu in the movie, it was giving me like Sonic pre and post. Like,
oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Like,
all these like live action, but they're not live action. It's like, why are we calling it that? God, just no. Absolutely no.
I'm picking Pikachu in Pokemon Yellow because of Ryan Reynolds. Final Fantasy VII original PlayStation 1 versus Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Remake.
Yeah, Remake.
There's everyone so beautiful.
Vaughn, what do you got?
Yeah, I you know, from a gameplay perspective, I will take the OG.
No, just nice. Like,
visual. It's visual. It's visual.
Oh, then. Yeah.
All right, Fortnite versus Apex Legends. Apex Legends has to be the winner. Come on,
Apex.
Apex.
Fortnite.
Apex. Maybe I just stacked these all for my favorites.
I might be the only Fortnite.
I think Fortnite managing is. I think it's Fortnite.
I love the style.
Okay. Oh my god.
The personalities in Apex Legends are much better, but Fortnite somehow unifying everything under the sun is pretty impressive to me.
Yes.
All right.
I don't.
Oh, sorry, Zach. You got
right. Yeah, Fortnite. Everyone said. Okay.
Nice.
Wow. Just you and me.
Damn,
and
I'm glad I got an ally.
I said Apex Legends.
Okay,
I
good. And Sam. Sam can come in with the club. Yeah.
Okay.
I was the first one to say Apex Legends. I don't even like that game that much. All right, last one. And I'm glad Amanda did this because I wouldn't have thought of this.
This is the hardest one, I feel like.
You say the worst one?
No, the hardest one. This is the toughest one, I think, to decide.
It is the toughest one because these games are connected for no reason other than they are both good looking and indies.
And hand-drawn-ish.
And good-ass games.
Yeah, Hollow Knight versus Cuphead.
Hollow Knight.
Also pronounced Cuphead.
I think Hollow Knight. I think I would prefer it if Cuphead didn't like look like an old-timey cartoon. Like if it was just like more normal-looking, I think I would like it a lot more.
It's a horror game because of that for me. I'm like, no,
I think,
yeah.
It's scary.
Like, if it was just like a normal platformer, I would have vibed with it a lot more.
I think
the
Cuphead
gameplay was good. The aesthetic was not it.
Sorry, my bad. I feel like Cuphead is the more impressive feat. Mm-hmm. I don't know how big Studio MDHR. I don't know how big they are. I thought it was two people. Like that painstaking. I know we did an article for the website many, many moons ago. Former site alum Anna Hickey wrote about like because she's an artist and drawing on ones and twos, and it just seems very, very difficult what they did. And not to say that I know Hollow Knight was hand-drawn too, I believe, but that is to say, I still prefer Hollow Knight. Like, Hollow Knight, I think, has just got the atmosphere, it's got everything, the music.
Yeah, two of my favorites ever, so. Yeah. I mean, I know I said Cuphead at the beginning, I gotta stick with it, but, man, Hollow Knight, just, nice. Yeah. It's perfect, it's beautiful, it's outstanding, and the characters, there's so many just unique, interesting people you stumble upon, bugs and environments. Say enough.
Amanda, where's Silk Song?
Yo, ask me again, you know, at the end of my life, man. I'll be on my deathbed being like, Silk Song is on my fantasy team. I believed. Man.
We're going to get you that taxi. You're going to be able to hold on to it.
Yeah, this game better come out. But for what it's worth, I agree with everything here. Hollow Knight.
All right. I'm a Hollow Knight guy too, but I also haven't actually played Cuphead. So.
But I really, I admire Cuphead.
Sam, as our resident Microsoft person, how have you not played Cuphead? And our resident hard platformer guy.
I don't get it. Well put.
sounds like his next challenge. That's a winter break game for Sam.
No, yeah, I don't know. It's like I just never got around to it, man. I don't have a good excuse here. I don't have a good joke.
Gotta play it.
Yeah.
It's pretty short, too.
Yeah,
I got him. Donkey Kong Country 2. Yeah,
it's basically Donkey Kong Country 4 when you think about it.
There is a Donkey. You know what? We're going to the outro.
I got him upset.
We'll be back in a second. After this quick break. And we're back for this quick outro. Thanks again for listening. You can check out the work of everyone here on punishbacklog.com. We got a lot of great stuff. Live coverage on Metaphor ReFantazio, coverage of Legend of Zelda Echoes of Wisdom. We got a big list of Metroidvanias. We got plenty of other lists coming out, and you're going to love them. But before we go, let's go around and just say what we're playing right now. I've been in the middle of playing Metaphor ReFantazio, and today I started the Spyro Reignited Trilogy. Those games hold up a lot better than I expected. Amanda, what are you playing?
Well, that's actually good. I was thinking, I was like, maybe I can ask them to compare dragons, like Spyro or a dragon in Skyrim. And then I was like, now I'm just like, I'm just having too much fun just thinking about dragons.
Spyro.
yeah, I'm still been in the process of just a couple of really tough months. So I really haven't started anything new. But I've been playing some Apex Legends matches and not being the worst at it. So that's always nice.
Zach.
I got a bunch going on, but still getting through Zelda, Echoes of Wisdom. And last night I picked up Chants of Sinnar, which I know David had mentioned. Really cool. Good art style too. Fun puzzle game, all about kind of deciphering different languages, and makes you think. And it's been good so far. Almost stayed up all night playing it, so excited to do that again today.
Yeah, I've heard great things. It's also on my list, I guess, after Cuphead now. Kay.
I've been getting into playing Magic the Gathering, both paper and digital. So I've been playing a lot of Arena. I grinded from like Bronze 4 to like Diamond 2 in like 2 days. So
yeah, wow. Tell me something that surprises me.
Horribly unfun. I don't think I like it.
Because you grind it for those new levels.
All right, Vaughn, what do you got for me?
I'm a little bit all over the place. Just, you know, goes against the website's doctrine. But we got Dragon's Dogma, Dead Space, Tekken 8, and Red Dead Redemption 2. So, you know, I'm cooked.
No, you're right in with the doctrine. That's you're right at home. You're right with your family here.
Oh man, it's a wrap for you, man. You're not finishing any of those. David, close us out.
Yeah, so I'm playing UFO 50. Surprise, surprise. About 50 hours in. Played 35 of 50 games in that, and I haven't completed most of them, so you know I'm cooked there. Playing Metaphor as well, loving it. And I'm playing Alan Wake 2, which I didn't get to last year, which is very, very
nice.
Good.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Well, a lot of great games going on here. A lot of more great games to come, and you can read and or hear all about them if you check out everything on punishbacklog.com. And that's all, folks. Thanks for listening.